The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next hour I will be reading to you from Time Magazine. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit G. Suggs Insurance, that is GSUGGSinsurance.com, or call 919-875-8889. Today's edition of Time Magazine is dated December 26, 2022/January 9, 2023. As usual, the front cover is outlined in red, a bright red border, with a narrow inner border of white. Time is superimposed in large white capital block letters upon a pale gray background. Person of the Year is the large headline, Volodymyr Zelensky and the Spirit of Ukraine. Volodymyr Zelensky's photograph is the portrait on today's cover, or on this edition's cover. That individual is surrounded by photographs of other people, unidentified, on the cover, with a huge crowd facing him. Now, on this cover shot, we see only his head, neck, and shoulders. He has brown, somewhat wavy hair with brown facial hair, neatly trimmed. He's wearing what looks like a dark blue or black T-shirt under a green, an olive green jacket or shirt. And in the background, besides the crowds and besides these few other people whose portraits surround him, who may or may not be associated with Ukraine, again, it's unknown, are sunflowers, which I believe are the national flower of Ukraine, as well as Ukrainian flags flying, and those are horizontal stripes, half blue, half yellow. Moving then to the text of the first article. Oh, by the way, Volodymyr is spelled V-O-L-O-D-Y-M-Y-R, Zelensky, Z-E-L-E-N-S-K-Y. That may not be technically the correct pronunciation, but I am patterning it after what I hear on national media. Behind the scenes, from the editor, and the editor is Edward Felsenthal, editor-in-chief. Behind the scenes on the cover of Time, the year ended as it began. In January, our cover featured Alexei Navalny, imprisoned Russian opposition leader and famous dissident, who warned in a profile by Time senior correspondent Simon Schuster against appeasing Vladimir Putin. Time and again, the West falls into Putin's elementary traps, Navalny said. It just takes my breath away. This time, there was no appeasement, as Time's 2022 Person of the Year, Volodymyr Zelensky, who appears on the final cover of the year, persuaded the West that freedom was at stake, not just in Ukraine, but across the world. If they devour us, the sun in your sky will get dimmer, Zelensky told Simon during a remarkable interview on a private train journey in November. Simon has spent much of the year reporting from the presidential compound in Kyiv. His time with Zelensky for this project offers an unprecedentedly intimate window into the president's thinking. Both covers are the work of artist Neil Jameson under the guidance of Time creative director D.W. Pine. The Person of the Year cover incorporates images of Ukrainians and others who represent the spirit of Ukraine that swept the world as thousands stepped in to help. We tell some of those heroic stories in this issue, in a piece by Times' Carl Vick and Yasmin Serhan. The issue also includes images by Ukrainian photographer Maxim Dondyuk, who's worked with Time and with Simon since 2014. He's been covering the war with the eye of a seasoned photojournalist and the heart of a native, and he shares extraordinary photos of Zelensky in settings no journalist has previously seen. Person of the Year has always been an occasion to step back and think about the year through the lens of the people who helped shape it. For 2022, we broadened the forms of influence we recognize, adding Icon of the Year, Innovators of the Year, and Breakthrough Artist of the Year, while continuing our tradition of choosing an Athlete of the Year, Entertainer of the Year, and Heroes of the Year. The new recognitions have been an opportunity to see leadership from different vantage points, and each offers the exciting challenge of telling that story in a unique way. Sometimes that means constructing an elaborate set with a faux forest and vintage station wagon, as we did for artist Petra Collins' shoot of our Entertainer of the Year, Blackpink. It can mean the spectacular photograph of Michelle Yeoh, first Icon of the Year, in a sequined gown from the final collection of the late designer and Time 100 alum Virgil Abloh. For baseball superstar Aaron Judge, the key prop on the set for his Athlete of the Year shoot was a pile of double bubble gum. Despite being weeks away from becoming one of the highest-paid players in baseball history, the New York Yankees slugger gamely blew bubbles for photographer Martin Scheller. "I think my parents are happy that I'm on my own bill now, and they don't take me to the dentist anymore," Judge told Times' Sean Gregory, of his habit of chewing lots of the stuff during games. That's double bubble. One of the most challenging covers was for Heroes of the Year. Among the many freedoms that the Islamic Republic of Iran has eroded is freedom of the press, and journalists have an increasingly hard time reporting in the country. We turned to Foro Alay, a gifted Iranian photographer, to make portraits of the courageous women who are part of the growing movement for, as they put it, woman, life, freedom. That story is accompanied by a heartbreaking interview by Time contributing editor Angelina Jolie with Roya Piray, whose mother was killed in the protests. The images in the package were overseen by Director of Photography Catherine Pomerantz and Senior Photo Editor Dillis Ning, along with Kara Milstein and Song-Suk Sylvia Kong. The issue was designed by digital design director Victor Williams, and the digital site was overseen by assistant managing editor Elizabeth Murray and supported by Audrey Clark. For the seventh year, the entire project was led by executive editor Ben Goldberger. "Influence is not the exclusive domain of the powerful," Ben notes. "I am proud that this year's choices show that it can take many forms." A few photos are on this page, actually on two pages. They're small shots. There is one of Time's Simon Schuster and President Zelensky speaking in the leader's private train on their return from the liberated city of Kherson. They're both dressed casually and appear to have coffee or another hot beverage in front of each of them. They're smiling. It looks like a train car, a private train car. Here's the slugger Aaron Judge posing for the photographer. He's dressed in black, casually, black jeans, black t-shirt, showing his muscles. He has some shrubbery in the background, lots of concrete surrounding him, and he's holding a bat as if he's ready to hit a homer. And there's another photo below that of several bags, but they're neat. They're not piles of loose bubblegum. They're packages of the bubblegum used in the shoot, and it says double bubble on it. And there's a photograph of Ukrainian photographer Maxim Dondyuk, and he's dressed in artillery clothing. It looks like a heavy-duty jumpsuit, and he's got a bulletproof vest and some kind of a helmet. It looks like a soft helmet. I have no idea what it's composition is, and it says press in large letterings on both the vest and the cap. He's a person with a lot of dark brown hair and facial hair. I don't know what's on the top of his head because the helmet is. He's wearing glasses. And we're going to move on now to a couple of photos inside the magazine, Time Entertainer of the Year, Global Superstars Blackpink. There are four young women here. It looks like they're seated in a limousine. We see the tops of them because they're leaning upon the backs of seats, and they're dark-haired, and one's a blonde, and looking into the camera. And then Icon of the Year is trailblazing actor Michelle Yeoh. She's a very dignified-looking individual wearing a very stylish gown. It's in black with white polka dots, but some of the polka dots are round and some are elongated. She's wearing very long black leather opera gloves, and she has short black hair, dark eyes, pink rouged lips, and she's looking upward away from the camera. And let's see, a couple more portraits here. Athlete of the Year, home run king Aaron Judge. He has very short cropped dark hair. He's youthful looking, brown eyes sparkling, looking directly into the camera with very white teeth. And he has the two horizontal marks beneath his eyes on either side of his nose that ball players sometimes wear. Time Heroes of the Year, Fighting for Freedom, the Women of Iran. We see the backs of three women here, one with long brown hair, one with shoulder-length black hair, one with shorter blonde hair. Don't see their faces, just the backs of them. And those are the Icons of the Year photographs that Time has included. Now here's a page of quotes. 13 quotes, 2022, the year in quotes. I am human, and amid these dark times, I too miss joy, light, and fun. Spoken by Sanna Marin, Finland's Prime Minister, August 23rd, responding to criticism over images of her partying with friends. Florida is where woke goes to die. Spoken by Ron DeSantis, the state's Republican governor, after winning re-election, November 8. I very much desire to be divorced, said Kim Kardashian in February 23 legal documents, seeking to end her marriage to Kanye West, whom she described as causing her emotional distress. Will Liz Truss outlast this lettuce? Quoted from the Daily Star, a British tabloid, after setting up a live stream pitting a vegetable's staying power against the prime minister's, the lettuce won after Truss resigned October 20. Please send the police now, said a fourth grade student in Uvalde, Texas, in a phone call to law enforcement during the May 24 mass shooting at Robb Elementary School. I was out of line and I was wrong, said Will Smith in an Instagram post March 28, apologizing for slapping Chris Rock at the Oscars March 27. I'm the effing president. Take me up to the Capitol now, said former White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson. in June 28 testimony relating what then-President Donald Trump reportedly instructed his security detail to do during the January 6 insurrection. "I experienced a resurrection," said Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, former president of Brazil, October 30, following an election victory over Jair Bolsonaro that will return him to the country's top office. "When I was a little girl, all I wanted to see was me in the media, someone fat like me, black like me, beautiful like me," said Lizzo after winning an Emmy Award September 12 for Outstanding Competition Program. "A monsoon on steroids," said UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres August 30 when he described historic floods in Pakistan that displaced more than 30 million people. A stark reminder that anti-Semitism is still alive and we must continue to fight it worldwide, said Naftali Bennett, then Prime Minister of Israel, on the January 15 hostage crisis at a Colleyville, Texas synagogue. "The authority to regulate abortion is returned to the people and their elected representatives from Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito's majority opinion in the Dobbs case, striking down Roe v. Wade, June 24. And finally, I humbly beg forgiveness for the evil committed by so many Christians against the indigenous peoples," said Pope Francis, July 25, regarding the role of Catholic schools in the forced assimilation of native peoples in Canada. Firsts and lasts, 2022. Beginning with firsts, Beijing, 2022, February 4, Beijing becomes the first city to have hosted both Summer and Winter Olympics when the 2022 Games begin. This appears to be in chronological order. April 7, Ketanji Brown Jackson becomes the first black woman confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court. May 7, an outbreak of monkeypox begins when a case of the virus is reported in London. July 13, the euro falls below the U.S. dollar for the first time in 20 years. August 27, Tom Brady's first appearance on the field, having returned to the NFL after announcing his retirement. October 31, Taylor Swift becomes the first artist to claim every top 10 spot on Billboard's Hot 100 chart at once. November 3, Netflix introduces ads to its U.S. service for the first time in the streamer's 15-year history. November 8, Laura Healey of Massachusetts becomes the first out lesbian to be elected governor in the U.S. November 18, North Korea completes the first full test launch of its Hwasong-17 missile, which analysts say is capable of hitting anywhere in the continental U.S. And now for the lasts, beginning January 23, Tom Brady plays his final NFL game before announcing his retirement. January 31, last game of Wordle before New York Times acquisition. April 2, men's basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski coaches the last game of his 42-year career at Duke University. April 28, after 19 seasons, the last episode of the Ellen DeGeneres Show tapes. May 23, crews remove the last functioning public payphone in Manhattan. August 23, the last surviving member of an isolated indigenous group is found dead in Brazil, marking the first recorded disappearance of an uncontacted tribe in the country. September 16, Phantom of the Opera, Broadway's longest-running show, announces it is ending. Its last performance will be April 16, 2023. October 15, last scheduled BTS show after the K-pop supergroup announced its members were taking a hiatus. October 21, Spain becomes the last European country to lift all of its remaining COVID-19 entry restrictions. Then and now, 2022, Elon Musk, Person of the Year 2021, by Alejandro de la Garza. Last year, Elon Musk seemed to have escaped the force of gravity. Stock prices for car maker Tesla hit all-time highs, while SpaceX had landed a NASA contract to put astronauts on the moon. It was, as my colleagues and I wrote in the 2021 Person of the Year profile, the year of Elon Unbound. But hurtling through space, one risks falling into the orbit of something else. Musk has spent an increasing share of his time on Twitter in recent years, a growing obsession that paved the way for him to buy the platform this year for $44 billion. Musk found success on the leading edge of technological change. Twitter, though, was an aging empire, and the revolution that Musk proposed was based not on innovation, but on politics. He has spent the year banging a free speech drum to justify the acquisition, and in the weeks since the sale went through, has reinstated once banned users and even appeared to take direction from the far right over which left-wing accounts to delete. He wants to rebuild the platform, but his shakeups have cut engineering talent to the bone and cost the company many of the moderators who helped assuage advertisers' fears over toxic content. As of November 22, half of the platform's top 100 advertisers had left, according to progressive watchdog group Media Matters for America. Observers might point out that Musk's impetuousness is what brought him success in the first place, but his brashness has formerly been checked by other forces, among them former NASA engineers at SpaceX and Tesla CTO J.B. Straubel, known for insulating subordinates from Musk's ever-shifting demands. There are no Straubels surrounding Musk at Twitter. He may yet remake the world's information universe as he sees fit. More likely, this is Musk's white whale, his Russian campaign. To grow, one must have an understanding of one's own limitations. Wandering in an online echo chamber, Musk appears to have lost sight of his. Queen Elizabeth II, Person of the Year, 1952. Time named the monarch Woman of the Year shortly after her ascension, calling her a fresh young blossom on roots that had weathered many a season of wintry doubt. Elizabeth had reigned for 70 years when she died September 8 at 96. The UK observed a 10-day mourning period, and her funeral was watched by millions. American Women, Person of the Year, 1975. While highlighting opposition to a shifting power structure, including in the form of legal defeats, Time argued feminism had spread far and deep. In the U.S., nearly half a century later, mainstream U.S. feminism saw another major legal defeat when the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade, which guaranteed the right to abortion. Vladimir Putin, Person of the Year 2007, Time noted that Putin's then 7 years of leadership of Russia had given the country stability at significant cost to the principles and ideas that free nations prize. Since Putin ordered a full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February, that war has displaced roughly 14 million and left more than 40,000 troops and civilians dead. 2022, the year in guns. A Time of Senseless Tragedy and Cautious Progress by Charlotte Alter. In America's battles against gun violence, 2022 was a time in which nothing seemed to change, and yet some things finally did. Another round of mass shootings seemed to echo earlier attacks in a morbid rhyme of senseless loss. But this year, Congress also offered hope that the rhythm might finally be disrupted, passing federal gun safety legislation for the first time in nearly 30 years. Americans have said never again many times before. A cover of Time released in June drew on a motif that we have had sad cause to repeat several times in recent years, including after the 2018 Parkland shooting. But in 2022, again, seemed to come with alarming frequency. 10 years after the Sandy Hook massacre, a gunman murdered 19 students and 2 teachers at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. 6 years after the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, a shooter killed 5 people in an LGBTQ nightclub in Colorado Springs. 3 years after a racially motivated shooting at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, authorities are investigating the massacre of 10 people at a grocery store in Buffalo, New York, as a hate crime. Bullets flew at high schools and colleges and at a parade in Highland Park, Illinois, that was packed with young families celebrating the 4th of July. In May, the CDC announced firearm deaths had become the leading cause of death for American children. In some ways, these tragedies simply continued a drumbeat of slaughter that's defined American life for the past decade. It might be tempting to read 2022 as a grim reminder of the intractability of the problem. As of December 6, there have been 620 mass shootings this year, according to the independent data collection group Gun Violence Archive, which counts incidents in which 4 or more people are shot, aside from the shooter. This year was on track to have the second most shootings since the group began tracking in 2013. But even if 2022 wasn't different, what I can tell you is that it was different for me, says Kitty Brantner, a recruiter and mother of 3 in Winnetka, Illinois. After the shooting at the Highland Park 4th of July parade, she started March 4th, that's F-O-U-R-T-H, a nonprofit devoted to lobbying for a federal assault weapons ban. If not now, when, she says. We've got several massacres over the course of months, so what are we waiting for? Brantner was not the only one driven to action. In June, President Joe Biden signed the first federal gun safety law in nearly 3 decades, a bipartisan bill that expanded background checks, incentivized states to pass so-called red flag laws to keep guns away from people who may be dangerous to themselves or others, set aside millions for mental health and school safety, stiffened penalties for gun trafficking, and expanded domestic violence protections to include dating partners, not just spouses. The bill, which won support from 15 Senate Republicans, including Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, was an unexpected breakthrough. While it fell far short of what many gun safety advocates wanted, it was cheered as an important step after decades of stalemate. And there was motion at the state level as well. At least 45 new laws addressing gun violence have been passed in states across the country, according to Every Town for Gun Safety, up from roughly 30 last year. I think the shift that we've seen is, let's just do what we can agree on now, says David Hoag, a Parkland survivor who co-founded March for Our Lives. I'm just trying to build consensus at this point. I'm tired of debating. There were other setbacks for the gun safety movement as well. More aggressive federal legislation is blocked. The House passed an assault weapons ban in July, but the measure has virtually no chance of passing the Senate. In June, the Supreme Court struck down New York's ban on concealed carry. When the state quickly passed a new law imposing strict restrictions on who can carry a concealed weapon, that law was also challenged. But gun safety advocates say that perhaps the most promising development of 2022 was an invisible one. There was little midterm backlash on either side to the bipartisan gun bill, suggesting politicians have less to fear from the gun lobby than they once did. We took bipartisan action on the issue, and people who supported it still won, says Hoag. None of them paid an electoral price for it on either side, which shows that bipartisanship is possible. 2022, the year in climate. Here's a photograph. It's all green. It looks like a lot of green broccoli stuffed together. But it's a tree. There's one bright spot of pink in here, and it is bright pink. A tree with pink foliage sticks out of the Amazon rainforest, June 6. The leader is financing the planet's future by Justin Warland. Understanding climate change requires wrapping your head around some crazy financial figures. To transition the global economy away from fossil fuels, according to the International Energy Agency, governments, financiers, and businesses must invest some $4 trillion into clean energy every year, beginning in 2030. That sounds like a lot, but it's dwarfed by the cost of doing nothing. Insurance giant Swiss Re warned last year climate change could cut off nearly 15% of global economic output by 2050. In 2022, these numbers came to the fore as leaders grappled with the urgent need to find the green, to go green. Perhaps no single climate investment this year will go further than the $369 billion the U.S. is spending to catalyze renewables and cut emissions via the Inflation Reduction Act. After holding up the legislation for the first 18 months of Joe Biden's presidency, West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin struck a deal in July to bring the law's most significant provisions to life. Analysts say it will help dramatically cut U.S. emissions and incentivize trillions more in private investment. Speaking of private investment, Yvonne Chouinard, founder of retailer Patagonia, made waves in September when he announced he would donate the entire company, reportedly valued at around $3 billion, to save the planet. Future profits will be used to address climate change, not to benefit shareholders. Elsewhere, satisfying shareholders has proved a difficult needle to thread. Many investors are eager to see companies prioritize environmental, social, and governance ESG issues, but some politicians, including in Florida and Texas, are trying to block state funds from making ESG investments. Perhaps no one is under more pressure than BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, who has advocated for sustainable investment. He wrote in his annual letter in January, his approach represents the latest iteration of capitalism and is not woke. In the public sector, too, leaders widely agreed this year that the status quo must change. At COP27, the annual UN Climate Summit, government struck a deal to create a fund to help pay for the losses and damages resulting from climate change that will disproportionately harm developing countries. While the issue has seen many champions over the decades, Mia Mottley, Prime Minister of Barbados, has emerged as a key voice for overhauling the global financial system to help poorer nations invest in climate programs without relying on costly debt. In September, she released the Bridgetown Agenda, a proposal to remake the International Monetary Fund and World Bank with climate change in mind. These ideas gained initial support at COP27, which Time marked with a cover, and that was the one with the orange oceans and the hot pink planets, including from the U.S., and are seen as a key complement to the Loss and Damage Fund. In Brazil, the election of Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva to replace the climate change denying Jair Bolsonaro as president led to an immediate rush of enthusiasm among climate advocates. Bolsonaro has allowed farmers to raise, that's R-A-Z-E, the Amazon, with little concern for the severe climate costs. Lula has yet to take office, but has already gotten to work crafting programs to facilitate wealthier countries paying for Brazil's efforts to protect the rainforest. All of these developments are groundbreaking, but they are still only baby steps toward a necessary restructuring of global climate finance. 2022, the year in silence breakers. Why survivors still worry about speaking out, by Eliana Docterman. There's a photo here, not very large, mostly brownish, with a few blurry backs of heads in the foreground, but in the background, against probably a brown wood-paneled wall, is seated a young woman, a blonde young woman, wearing a dark jacket and a blue and white striped shirt. We see only her collars and her face. And it's Amber Heard, who testified May 4 in a defamation case against her. 5 years after Time's Silence Breakers cover story for the 2017 Person of the Year issue, survivors of sexual assault and harassment are still fighting to be heard. Spurred by Me Too, which went viral that October, activists, politicians, and lawyers have pushed laws that would make covering up harassment more difficult. But although they have made progress on the legal front, the risks of stigmatization and retaliation persist. For decades, employers wielded mandatory arbitration agreements and non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, to keep claims out of the public eye. Mandatory arbitration occurs outside a courtroom, and there is no appeals process. Non-disclosure agreements prevent victims from discussing their experiences. This is not an issue that legislators focused on much at all before Me Too, says Andrea Johnson, Director of State Policy at the National Women's Law Center. Since 2017, however, 22 states and the District of Columbia have passed more than 70 workplace anti-harassment bills. In March, President Biden signed a ban on forced arbitration in cases of sexual assault and harassment, and in November, Congress passed the Speak Out Act, prohibiting the use of NDAs in cases of sexual harassment. But the legislation is not necessarily a silver bullet, Johnson says, and while Times cover story and these laws focus on workplace cases, the problem goes beyond that. In 2018, Amber Heard wrote a Washington Post op-ed calling herself a public figure representing domestic abuse. Her ex-husband, Johnny Depp, sued her for defamation and won, with the jury awarding him $15 million this June. Many legal experts expressed concern that the trial would have a silencing effect on victims, but it was not just the ruling that worried them. Misogynistic memes and edited videos depicting Heard as a liar and abuser were rampant on TikTok and Twitter, a signal to survivors that they might suffer the same if they speak up. Silence Breakers, featured in Time stories, say progress has slowed. Actor Danny Masterson's rape case ended in mistrial. Louis C.K., who admitted to sexually harassing women, won a Grammy in April. Outside Hollywood, the idea that Me Too has run amok manifests in hostility toward accusers. Lately, there's been a false narrative circulated that you can be canceled for anything, says University of California, Berkeley professor Celeste Kidd, who spoke to Time about her experience reporting harassment. The rumor will be that a professor was fired for saying one inappropriate thing on Zoom. But what these posts expressing outrage leave out is that it was just one instance of a long history of racial or gender discrimination. Kidd says students fear that their claims will be dismissed and they'll be called snowflakes. Gabriel Eubank, a silence breaker who sued New York's Plaza Hotel with five other women in 2017, moved to Indiana in 2019 because she felt her reputation had been ruined in the city's hotel world. But she continued to be harassed online. There's no way to stop it, she says. What happened to the normal people, not the celebrities, who were part of this issue? Johnson remains optimistic. She cites a September Pew poll that found 49% of Americans support the Me Too movement. Only 21% oppose it. While I might feel like we're taking some steps back, the public is very much moving forward, she says. Survivors are going to keep pushing until cultural change is permanent. The cover story about Vladimir Zelensky is very long, so I'm saving it. And I'm moving now to Forces of Light. Ordinary people from the front lines and beyond helped rally much of the world to Ukraine's side. Reporting here by Lisa Aubend, Copenhagen, Julia Zorthian, New York, and Diana Sarkisova, Washington. Even a week before the invasion, with U.S. officials warning Kiev might fall in as little as 72 hours, the defense of Ukraine was not actually a lost cause. It was a defining one. The country's T-shirted president would articulate the choice at hand March 1, 6 days after more than 100,000 Russian troops crossed the border. The translator choked up during Volodymyr Zelensky's speech to the European Parliament from somewhere in the besieged capital city. Life will win over death, Zelensky said, and light will win over darkness. As he spoke, the world was already sorting itself out, the response to the war coming as quickly as the invaders, quicker when Russian tanks ran out of gas on the road to Kyiv. The European Union, created to keep the peace within a continent riven for centuries by war, voted to punish the Kremlin in the ways that a bloc of 27 governments can, closing its airspace, sanctioning Vladimir Putin's cronies, banning imports of at least some Russian petroleum. NATO, formed to defend the same continent against Moscow's Cold War aggression, found not only new life but also new members, Finland and Sweden, signing up. Whole countries turned on a dime. Germany reversed 7 decades of self-enforced pacifism, pledging a 100 billion euro military revamp and agreeing to send heavy weapons to a conflict zone for the first time since World War II. Poland went from EU problem child to hero, its people taking in more than 1 million Ukrainian refugees, and its president one of the first leaders to travel to Kyiv. The U.S. threw open the depot doors on the world's mightiest arsenal. sending more than $17 billion in arms, materiel, and trainers, plus crucial intelligence and targeting assistance. Corporations followed suit, fighting the tide of globalization by dealing Russia out. Within months, 1,000 firms, that is 1,000 firms, either pulled up stakes or ceased operations, and the Russian economy moved from growth to contraction. But the most stirring answers to Zelensky's imperative came from individuals. Governments and blocs like companies have their own interests, to which Putin's aggression was not only morally offensive but also threatening. And true selflessness, after all, requires a self. So, at his home in the UK, Dr. David Nott started making plans. "This is an invasion of a democratic country on European soil," he says. "If it is allowed to happen in Ukraine, it's allowed to happen throughout the world, and there are so many places that have the potential for this to happen." Not, and that's spelled N-O-T-T, 66 is position to know. Years earlier, the physician and his wife Ellie set up an organization to train local doctors in how to treat war wounds. While working in Syria, he saw the effects of Russian munitions. "I knew that the tactics of the Russians are to bomb and to cause graft injuries and fragmentation injuries and really terrible wounds," says Nott. "So I knew that that was going to happen." Since February 24, he's been to Ukraine four times. Chef Jose Andres swung his humanitarian enterprise into a war zone that had been one of the breadbaskets of the world. By November, following the World Central Kitchen model of using local food and local people, 180 million, that's 180 million, free meals had been served in Ukraine. A literal lifeline in a nation where 6 months after the invasion, nearly 7 million people had fled their homes but remained in the country. Meanwhile, Kyiv's most famous chef, Yevgeny Klopotenko, 36, converted his restaurant into a military canteen and later opened a bistro in Lviv, offering free meals to refugees. He also did battle against Putin's assertion that Ukraine had no identity by celebrating the country's cuisine at every opportunity. Klopotenko says it was a huge win when UNESCO recognized borscht as part of Ukrainian heritage. "When you want to feel safe, you eat borscht," he says. "During the war, it became the symbol of survival." Most of the $10 billion in humanitarian aid from abroad arrived as cargo, and delivering it entailed risks determined largely by the whims of the enemy. At the rear, cruise missiles and Iranian-made kamikaze drones arrived infrequently, but with devastating effect. Closer to the front, people like Sergei Ivanchuk put their lives in danger every day. "We thought Russia would take us in a day," Ivanchuk, 30, recalls. "I thought I'd go to sleep and I'd wake up part of Russia. But when I woke up and saw Russia's effort was not working, I knew I would stay here and help my country win." March 9, he set off from his home in Poltava for Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city, just 22 miles from the border with Russia, to deliver 50 boxes of aid from France and a haul of gasoline so people could evacuate Kharkiv in their own cars. Russians ambushed him, and his own car was pierced by 30 bullets, his body by five, including a round through the lung. "The nurse thought I was sleeping when she went over to my mom and told her to prepare for death," recalls Ivanchuk, an aspiring opera singer who performed a short concert for his doctors before leaving the German hospital where he recovered. Medical facilities in Kharkiv at the time were less than ideal. Expectant mothers and newborns, whose health was already precarious enough for admission to the regional perinatal center, were rushed to the basement as the Russian assault began. Sometimes we're forced to do our work literally between two air raids, says Dr. Irina Kondratova, a pediatric anesthesiologist, who told UNICEF, adding, infants in intensive care must remain upstairs with the equipment that keeps them alive. Their nurses stayed with them. At one point, Russian shells demolished a city square 50 yards away. The way in which they fight and the courage and the resilience that they display in that fight, I think, is really inspiring to everybody, says actor Liv Schreiber, who co-founded Blue Check Ukraine to identify, vet, and fund grassroots organizations working in the country, of which there are a lot, 41,000, according to one group's estimate. The fight had been lonelier 8 years earlier when Russia took Crimea and sections of eastern Ukraine. Now it was the complete opposite of 2014, says Oleg Rozhnitsky, 36, a Ukrainian entrepreneur in Silicon Valley, who organized the support from the tech world pouring into Ukraine. A lot of tech is dual use, he notes, meaning both civilian and military. I was coming in thinking, we are on our own. In 2014, people did not show up. Countries did not show up. That contrast really motivated me. Credit the forces of light. This time, Putin's aggression looked so naked because by February 24, it had been stripped of the obfuscation that cloaked previous incursions, including 2008's into Georgia. Those offenses had been shrouded by disinformation campaigns that generated just enough uncertainty about what was true to allow Russian forces time to establish facts on the ground. NATO called the strategy hybrid war, and at the start of 2022, Putin was at it again. In the jittery days before the invasion, Russia's forces of darkness staged attacks that were actually elaborate provocations, reported by state-owned media as genuine, then cited by Russian officials as pretext for invasion. The claim on the morning of February 22 was that Ukrainian terrorists in Russian-held territory had set off a roadside bomb, killing three people. Gruesome footage panned across human remains. But this time, these frauds were being exposed by a small army of citizens around the globe, volunteers tracing the foundational facts that underpin all reality, including the Internet, working in the open, comparing notes on Twitter, building trust by always showing their work. They inspected the footage for telling details. For instance, autopsy incisions visible in the charred skulls of the victims were clear evidence that cadavers from a morgue had been placed in a vehicle and set alight. The denizens of open-source intelligence, many of them trained by Bellingcat, the pioneering nonprofit that exposed the IED fake, remain on duty, tallying casualties, documenting atrocities, demonstrating how very much information and who is allowed access to it defines the conflict in Ukraine. Because once inside the country, the forces of darkness lived up to their name, taking down the Internet everywhere they went. It was a strategy for an invader that back home had outlawed the truth. Calling the war a war could get you a 15-year prison sentence in Russia. No one can tell the story of Ukraine like Ukrainians. For Olga Rudenko, the 33-year-old editor of the English-language Kiev Independent News site, 9 months of fighting has shifted the mission from the fresh shock of the invasion. Now the challenge is to find a way to talk about it so the world continues to care, she says. How do we keep telling the stories of human suffering so people want to continue to read them, when in some ways it is the same story of Russian troops doing horrible things in Ukraine? The answer, of course, resides in the example of the Ukrainians themselves. If the choices their president articulated gave moral clarity to an era we had mostly been scrolling through, it was people who gave it meaning by acting. There is such an overwhelming sense of, this is what needs to be done now, Rudenko says. This is where we need to be. Now, this article was abridged slightly. There are a few photographs here to share. There's an engineer, Oleg Kutkov, in Kiev. Now, this guy's has real short hair, black or dark brown. He's wearing a blue and black plaid shirt, and he's seated at a work table of an engineer. It looks like lots of switches and lots of monitors and lots of lights and lots of things on the desktop to do things with. I have no idea what they are. Then another photograph of Dr. Irina Kondratova at Kharkiv Regional Perinatal Center. She's dressed in white with her stethoscope, and she's walking alongside three other people. They're all in scrubs, and one of them is pushing a little cart, and I think it's a little neonatal portable ICU contraption, because there's a monitor, an electronic monitor hanging along the side of it. I cannot see the occupant because it's all a bundle of white inside there. But this woman, Dr. Irina, is obviously directing this transport of the little neonatal ICU cart. And then the last picture is that of a person cooking. It's a huge cooking pot. I don't know how many gallons it might contain, but it looks like a kitchen. There's a lot of white tile on the wall and stainless steel vents above, and there's a big window next to what is probably the stove. It's not within the photograph, and the window is cracked open. Then there's a guy that looks like he's dressed in a dark blue jumpsuit, and he's wearing a red toboggan cap, a knit cap, and he's about to spoon a ladle full of this, whatever the boiling substance is, into his mouth, because it is Chef Yevgen Klopotenko cooking borscht in Kiev. We have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com or call 919-875-8889. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.